HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Hi, this is Russell Friedman on Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net Radio, a network I am thrilled to be partnered with, associated with, good people doing good things. And I probably don't have to tell you there is not enough of that going on in our world. But speaking of our world, before we get started on today's show, I want to tell you that I am recently returned from a trip, kind of a bucket list trip, to Budapest, Hungary, or to pronounce it correctly, Budapest. Those of you who know that Buda and Pest are two different cities divided by the Danube River, and I stayed on the Pest side. It was actually a working holiday along with a little bit of sightseeing. I trained 20 new grief recovery specialists over there who will now be doing their practice groups, getting ready to help the people there who desperately need the grief recovery method. And I'm just very proud of that. The personal reason I was there or chose to make that trip is something a little different from my past. Once upon a yogi time, I owned a famous restaurant on Fairfax Avenue in Los Angeles called the Budapest Hungarian Restaurant. I had bought it from the original owner, who had gotten out of Hungary after the uprising in the late 50s. And the restaurant had actually been there 25 years when I bought it. And eventually, sadly, although in a life-changing way, I went bankrupt in that restaurant. It kind of died of old age. The clientele were older. The style of food was a style that's not popular anymore, in terms of heavy meals instead of a little piece of chicken or fish and a salad. 7-course meals you could gorge yourself on. At any rate, for several years, I owned this very famous restaurant until its end, and I had never been to Hungary nor to Budapest. So when this opportunity came to go to Budapest, it was on my bucket list, and I am eternally grateful that I went. It's a beautiful city. It's trying to come back into its own after years under Soviet rule and so on, but it, absolutely stunning. The architecture, some of it is just breathtaking, and sometimes the juxtaposition from the old architecture to the new, standing side by side, is kind of mind-boggling to see. But it kind of also gives you a history of that city and maybe of the world to see the old next to the new, and then you got to use your imagination to go further back. So it was an exciting trip for me. And it makes no direct or logical segue to today's topic on the show. The title of the topic of our show is I'm Fine and Other Lies. I'm Fine and Other Lies is also a subchapter heading in the Grief Recovery Handbook. And it has been famously there even before it was a book, because John W. James, the founder of the Grief Recovery Institute, in lecturing all around this country and the world, long before he wrote the Grief Recovery Handbook 30 years ago, had already recognized that one of the biggest issues for grievers and grief was the inability to tell the truth. And that was kind of enumerated by the amount of people who would say they were fine when they weren't. How are you? I'm fine. And yet their voice, their body language, their tone wasn't fine, and yet they would say it. So what John and I have taken to do over the years is we're lecturing to a large audience in public, you know, in like in a big hall or theater, even on the radio here we can do it, is to say, how many of you, now, if you're driving a car as you listen to this, don't raise your hand, but if you're just sitting at your computer or somewhere listening, you can raise your hand if I say, have you ever said I'm fine when you weren't? And I can see right in radio land and computer land, I can see all those hands up. In fact, hey, you, over there, raise your hand. Don't be lying here again. This is all about telling the truth. Okay, thank you. Boy, you got to watch people, even on the radio. Anyhow, when I do that in a large audience, and literally almost every hand in the hall goes up, I did it once in San Diego in a group of 1,000 people. How many of you have ever said, I'm fine when you're not? And 1,000 hands shot up. And then I said, okay, thank you for telling the truth. Now I have another question. How many of you like being lied to? And not one hand went up. So let's do this here on the radio. How many of you like being lied to? None of you. So we have almost a universal truth that almost everybody lies about how they feel. And that another universal truth almost that almost nobody likes being lied to. Why not? It feels weird. If I say, how are you? And you go, I'm fine. And I go, gosh, that doesn't feel fine. It feels like it's about me. There's something wrong with me that you don't tell me the truth. Now, obviously, I know, and I think anyone over the age of 6 or 8 or 10 knows that you don't really mean to be hurting me with your lie. But it still doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. Now, why would you want to be interacting or hanging out with or communicating with someone who isn't telling the truth on something so basic as, how do you feel? How you doing? Oh, great. Wow, that version of great, I don't think I want great. So let me go to the next question that I do ask in a live audience. Not that the rest of you out there aren't live or just not in front of me physically. I want you all to imagine that you're going to have an opportunity to have a 10 seconds to tell me why you don't tell the truth when someone says, how you doing or how do you feel? Just a simple question. I want you all to think about that for a few seconds. Why would you lie and say I'm fine when you're not fine? Now, it's not a trick question. It's a legit question, but I'm going to tell you right now that none of you, I don't care how many thousands or hundreds of thousands of people are listening to this or whoever listened to it, none of you are going to get the answer correctly. Some of you will say things like, I don't want to burden others with my feelings. Oh, isn't that sweet of you? How lovely. You were brought up so nicely. But think of it this way. If you won't burden me with the truth, if you don't feel good, or you think it would be a burden on me if you're just not having a great day, wouldn't it also be a burden if you were happy and chirpy and told me that? What if I'm in kind of a kind of mood? And I go, how you doing? You go, I'm great. And I go, oh, gosh, here she comes with that chirpy thing. I don't think I want to handle that. So your feelings, which are yours, not mine, are your truth. All I ever want from another human being is the truth. Remember, all of you out there in radio land already admitted, I saw you, that you don't like being lied to. And yet all of you admitted you lie about your feelings. So as they said once in an astronautical setting, Houston, I think we have a problem. We lie about how we feel, but we don't like being lied to about how other people feel. So the answer of not burdening others with feelings, we've dismissed that. So any of you are thinking that, you're out of the running. Now, some of you may say, well, you know, the question, how are you, and the answer, I'm fine, is just a convention. It's just a kind of a greeting. It's like a handshake, a verbal handshake. And while that's true, it's still BS. It is not an accurate answer to the question why you lie about how you feel. Okay, because there's, I don't think you're, again, none of you are going to get this right. The rest of you may come up with any concoction of reasons. I don't want to talk about it. Okay. But you are. If I can observe you nonverbally that you're not feeling right, you're already talking. You just aren't opening your mouth, your body, your hangdog expression, which reminds me, having just been in Hungary, reminds me of a German expression I learned when I was quite young, and somehow I've never forgotten it. And let me pre-apologize to any German speakers if my accent is not good. But the expression is, ist der eine Laus über der Leber gelaufen? Which, as far as I understand, means, is there a louse running over your liver, or what's eating you? Which is said to someone who's sporting a long face. So even though you may have not said you don't feel good, your body's communicating. Remember, the largest organ on your body is your skin. It's communicating all the time. Up to 90% of your ability to communicate is nonverbal. So when you say you haven't said anything, you have not told the truth because your body is always communicating. Just the slightest little angle of your head or look down with your eyes or just a shrug with your shoulders can send a message, an inadvertent message, although a truthful one. Your body doesn't lie the way your mouth does usually. And little children of all people pick up the lies because they are more bound and connected to nonverbal communication than verbal. So when you lie to your child, and if your child says, "What's wrong, Daddy?" or "What's wrong, Mommy?" and you lie and say, "I'm fine," child knows you're lying. So my nasty question to you is, do you really want to teach your children to lie about your feelings the way you do? Okay? Got to think about all that. Now, let's assume for the moment that we've exhausted all the wrong answers you all were spouting out about why you lie about how you feel. And let's get the correct answer by asking you all collectively a major question. Everybody ready? How many of you like feeling judged and found to be lacking? Oops, I don't see any hands. Anybody see any hands up? Mm-mm. So when the question is asked, why you lie, the answer is you lie because you don't want to be judged. As far back as we can remember, when you tell the truth, say, "I'm really feeling kind of low," someone will get in your face and say something really wrong like, "Oh, don't feel bad, tomorrow's another day. Don't feel bad, she's in a better place if someone important to you has died. Don't feel bad, you'll do better next time if it's about a breakup or a divorce." So every time we tell the truth about how we feel, we're told, "Don't feel that way." That's an absolute judgment of our feelings. It's a slap in the face. It's a way of saying that those feelings, those sad, painful, negative, uncomfortable feelings, are inappropriate in our communication. Therefore, don't do it. And so we have a universe that teaches us first to tell the truth and then takes it away from us in a thrice. Is it any wonder we're confused? Now, if you want any backup for this, let's do this again. Unless you're driving a car right now, I want you to think about this question. I'm going to assume that all of you are or have been married or in some kind of committed romantic relationship. And if your honey, your spouse equivalent, whatever the partner says, "What's wrong, honey? What's the universal answer?" And you all said it out loud. I heard you. The answer is nothing. Now, that's not true, but it's universal. Why do we say nothing, which is the same as lying and saying I'm fine when I'm not fine? Why do we do that? Again, because we're afraid we'll be judged and told, "Oh, you shouldn't feel that way. Tomorrow's another day. You shouldn't feel that way. Blah, 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 blah." So we go around in circles, trying to be honest with each other, but lying to each other, setting us ourselves up for failure. Now, you want to see where I'm going to tie this? What's the divorce rate? 50%? Do you think any part of that could possibly be the connection to non-truth? Now, we could define marriage and relationships and the feelings involved in many, many, many ways. But one of the virtues would be honesty, truth, trust. Those are words. Love. Love is a great word, but trust and truth are certainly two equally important words with love. How can we expect to have trust when we lie to each other and we know it? "I really want you to tell me the truth this time," as opposed to "that truth you told me the other time that was a lie." I mean, it's really confusing. And yet, the solution to almost all relationship problems that I have encountered in helping couples for the last 30 years, thousands of them, is tell the truth about yourself all the time. Now, tell the truth about yourself doesn't mean attack the other person. Doesn't mean recite a litany of what they did that made you feel the way you feel. It means what it says, tell the truth about yourself. And in that honesty, we usually don't attack our partner. And we're not even attacking ourselves. We're just being honest about our reaction to things in life, being human about it, and being truthful, to which our partner can go, wow, why, I hear you loud and clear. Or, gosh, me too. I had something like that just the other day. So instead of pitting ourselves against each other, we're putting ourselves together in a connective way, not to say that you know how I feel or I know how you feel. That's incorrect and a massive overstatement or even an understatement. But the reality is there's very little that any of us can experience that our partners can't at some level relate to or understand. You know, again, they won't have had the same experiences as we, and even if they did, they will have had different and unique reactions to those experiences. But in the need to establish uniqueness within the couplehood, we must start with the truth. It is the essential breach every time I've worked with a couple who are struggling. It's because neither or both will tell the truth, because they have been so conditioned for so long. If you're going to cry, go to your room. Cut out that crying. I'll give you a reason to cry. So that implies from an earliest age that feeling bad, feeling sad, not being at the top of your game is bad, and you shouldn't communicate it or express it or demonstrate it to others. Well, if that's true in your family, which is a really interesting unit of people based on trust and love and blood and genetics and so on, and here you are trying to build a bond with your mate, and yet you won't be honest with that mate, we're owed for everything. We got nowhere to go. So we're trapped in this idea, the idea of lying as a way of communicating. So, I mean, it may have struck you as odd that I'm starting with the topic today of I'm fine and other lies. We say, well, that's a sentence or two. Oh, no, I think I can do a 3-day workshop on what that does. And I can tell you, I have heard literally thousands of excuses, explanations, defenses, denials for not telling the truth. And not one of them has hit my heart and said, well, I'll buy that one. Oh, yeah, that works for me. Because what I know always and absolutely without any exception is that the key to trust is truth. How can you have trust in a relationship without truth? It doesn't even make sense. Let's build a trusting relationship on a web of lies. Hey, there's a plan. I like that. Let's lie, and we'll never know which one is lying when or what you say is truth or not. I mean, hopefully that sounds as stupid as it is. At the same time, I can hear in the back of some of your heads, I have this magical skill. I can hear the back of your brain going, but what if I tell the truth? Will they use it against me later? Do I make myself vulnerable? By gosh, one of these days I'm going to do a whole show on the V word, vulnerable. It has been given meaning and idea and feeling that, frankly, I don't think it has. What it has kind of translated to mean is that if I tell the truth, I'm vulnerable. Well, it seems to me that the opposite is true. If I lie, I'm vulnerable. If I lie, I'm setting up a miscommunication. If I tell the truth, the worst that can happen is you don't like what I say. You don't like what I'm thinking. You don't like the idea or philosophy from which it comes. And you may dislike me, which isn't for me to vote on. There's a lot of famous expressions. One of them is, what other people think of me is none of my business. And yet, in a way, because of how we were socialized, we were taught to be very preoccupied with what other people think of us. Now, please, I'm not saying that you should be rude and inconsiderate and say inappropriate things to anyone, adult or child. That is not the point. The point is that telling the truth in an appropriate way is always the only correct way. Lying is never the correct way. I was lying to protect you. Well, what you did is make me never trust you. So how can lying create a bond that you breach by doing it. So this little section, it's not even a full chapter in the book, this little section called I'm Fine and Other Lies is bigger than a bread box. It sets us up. Now, some people, when I teach them, tell the truth about themselves all the time, they misinterpret it. And they think that's giving them a privilege to say what they think or feel or believe about you. But that's an attack. So why don't we leave a little kind of pregnant pause here as we get ready to go to break. And we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what the truth really is, how it really looks and sounds. This is Russell on Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net Radio. Hurry back.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hi, this is Russell back on HealthyLife.net Radio on Moving Beyond Loss, the Grief Recovery Institute, the Grief Recovery Method, the Grief Recovery Handbook, When Children Grieve, Moving Beyond Loss, Moving On, the Grief Recovery Handbook for Pet Loss. Have I left anything out? I don't think so. Those are some of our written materials, and of course our website, www.griefrecoverymethod.com, on which there are hundreds of articles we've written over the years that you can download and print and read and share and get the benefit of our life's work, of what we've been doing to help people. It's heartwarming to do. It's even more heartwarming when we get emails and regular mail from people saying how positively their lives have been impacted by what we do. And interestingly enough, an awful lot of people do write to us about the impact of that little section of the book called I'm Fine and Other Lies. Now, just before the break, I had started to introduce the idea that we teach people tell the truth about yourself all the time. The key word is yourself. In helping individuals within couples or helping couples, which are made up of at least two individuals, what we keep running into is this people misunderstanding the phrase, tell the truth about yourself, and they take it as a license to kind of recite a litany about the other person. Yet the phrase is tell the truth about yourself, not tell me what you believe about him or her. The moment your mate starts to tell you about you, and it's negative, your dukes go up. You defend yourself. I have tried for many years to train therapists and other mental health professionals to not pit the, I don't want to call them combatants, but it's what happens. If you have a couple, let's say a man and a woman go for therapy, they're struggling in their relationship. Sometimes the therapist will have the woman say to the man or the man say to the woman, when you do this, I feel that. Well, that is not telling the truth about yourself. That's telling your opinion of the impact of what the other people did on you. That's about your reaction to what they did. It's not the truth about you. I once had a really, really amazing argument with a woman I was training who was a PhD therapist in Beverly Hills who had been taught this technique, when you do this, I feel that. And what she didn't realize, I accidentally had some inside information about her. A little birdie had told me. I hadn't really done any spying. She had put together a practice trying to be a couples therapist and was using this technique, when you do this, I feel that. And the minute the woman say, when you do this, I feel that, the man would put up his dukes and say, no, that wasn't me, that was you. And if it was the genders were reversed and the man went first, when you do this, I feel that, the woman would put up, nah, that was you. Well, then she would have a war on her hands. And she would have one or maybe two sessions with the couple, and then they would stop coming back. And the reason she came to me was her practice as a therapist was going to heck in a handbucket. Because she didn't realize that she was teaching people to attack each other. Well, if you attack me, I'm going to defend. How are we going to get to a positive, healthy, connected, communicated conclusion? Even an agreement to disagree if you attack me or if I attack you. And in spite of the fact that she came to me or to our training, our grief recovery certification training, for help with her practice, she argued in defense of the very thing that was killing it. It took me 2 days. That's a long time. It should have taken 2 minutes to get her to see what was wrong. She really had to learn grief recovery. She really had to learn what we teach in 4 days and can be, you know, enhanced by doing the work in the book about how to tell the truth about yourself without attacking your partner. I swear, if I could only find a way to put in a bottle this whole concept of telling the truth about yourself, not your opinion about your partner, I could make the divorce rate go from 50% to 2%. I could just cut it in fraction just from that simple thing. Because a part of me, maybe naive, maybe optimistic, kind of believes that a lot of people have chosen each other correctly. Whatever the magic is, whatever the pheromones in the, you know, the smell system, whatever the intellectual, social, sexual attractions, they're probably pretty valid. What throws it out of kilter is the attacks. So if you attack me by telling me I did this to you, I'm going to attack you back. And once that happens, what starts to happen is a shopping list of infractions. And you did this, and last Tuesday you did that. When we got back from the movie, you said this. Well, and then I'm trying to defend myself. And how do I best defend myself? By attacking you. In our romantic relationship book, the book that helps you deal with divorce and other endings, and Moving On is the name of that book. I really recommend it. We talk about that. We talk about the fact that people sabotage the relationship by attacking their partner and never realizing that they're doing it because someone has given them the idea that it's their absolute right to attack. And that isn't what is really was taught them. I give you, not that I have the power, the right to tell the absolute truth about yourself. I give you zero right to tell your opinion about someone else. It is the opinions about your mate that destroy the relationship. Now, that isn't to say you don't have them. We're not naive. And in certain situations, couples can and do have very lovely, meaningful, even helpful, funny, self-deprecating. They go, well, you know, I can be a real jerk, and I can be really dogmatic about this, or I can be stubborn about this. And, yeah, I remember I learned that from my dad, or my mom. Yeah, yeah, you can have some meaningful stuff there and stuff that could even lead to change. But the minute a couple starts going at each other, change ain't going to happen. Everyone's going to get retrenched. Everyone's going to say they're right. And if I'm right, you're wrong. And there are at least 44 wars on the surface of this earth right now, each of which is fought on the basis of I'm right, you're wrong, you die. We're not talking I'm right, you're wrong, we divorce. We're talking death. I want you to think about the world we live in and the bloody things that have happened just recently in this country. And I'm saying that today in July of 2016, but I guarantee you if you listen to this a year from now or 2 years from now or 3 years from now, there will still have recently been violence somewhere. Sad, true, probably sadly unchangeable, unfixable condition of humanity, nature of the beast. That's not to say that we shouldn't strive for better ways to communicate with each other as individuals within a couple, as families, and as a society. So when we come back from a little break on HealthyLife.net radio on Moving Beyond Loss, let's talk a little bit about better ways to communicate our thoughts and feelings in a very direct sense with the people right around us and in a broader sense with the world we live in. See you in a minute.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, this is Russell back on Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net radio. And before we start this segment, I want to remind you that at www.griefrecoverymethod.com, there is a thing called a specialist finder. Well, that may not make sense to you until I give you a little flesh it out for you. The people we certify and train become certified grief recovery specialists. Some of them are therapists and social workers. Some are priests, rabbis, and ministers. Some are funeral directors or cemeterians. Some are citizens who live down the street from you. Every walk of life, some professions, some not. The training is universal. The only thing the people need to qualify to be trained by us is, listen to this, a genuine desire to help grieving people. That's what this whole organization is founded on. And it works immaculately. In fact, I must say, in fairness, some of the people who have no professional backdrop, they don't have they're not a mental health professional or a doctor or anything, they actually do better faster with this because they don't have to unlearn stuff. They can just go from that heart position, a genuine desire to help grievers. And the only big surprise for them sometimes when they come to our training is guess who they have to work on first? Themselves. We will not allow anyone to take our method and work on others unless they work on themselves first. And the premise of that is my favorite line we ever wrote, which I think is in our When Children Grieve book. And the question is, would you take scuba diving lessons from someone who has never scuba dived? And I don't think anybody out there is going to do that. So we insist and demand that in order to qualify to get a certificate from us, they must demonstrate to us in real physical time where they're in the same rooms with us, not via email or distance learning. They must show us that they will do the actions they are then going to ask other people to do. So if you think you want some help beyond the format of the programs in our books, especially When Children Grieve, especially in the Grief Recovery Handbook, and you want some help, go to www.griefrecoverymethod.com. Go to a thing that says if you're looking for help for yourself, and then you'll find Specialist Finder. And then you will go and you will put in your zip code. And it will hopefully cough back to you a listing of the people who are within a 25 or 50 or 100 a radius of miles, depending on what you signify when you click in. And hopefully there'll be someone you can contact by phone or email. Hopefully there'll be several. You can call a few of them. See how you feel. Ask them some questions. Make sure you feel safe. You know, because everyone's different. You know, everyone, while they still have the uniformity of our program, they all have a little different personality. So check it out. Some of them charge substantial fees, some moderate fees, some very little fees. A lot of them work through churches and other social service organizations, which have very limited fee structures. For us, it's not about the money. It's about the heart. Obviously, if you get help, it's worth every penny in the world. And if you don't get help, it ain't worth a nickel. So the real key is that we believe that, I wish I could say it's universal, but the vast, vast, vast majority of people we have trained are excellent at helping people. And again, if you find one and you just don't jive with that person, go find another one because, again, the personalities are, you know, personalities affect things. Some of you like listening to me. Some of you go, I don't like him so much. That's okay. It's not about me. It's about the program. So www.griefrecoverymethod.com, the specialist finder. Find some help. It's really sometimes better than trying to do it on your own just with the book. You can use the Grief Recovery Handbook with a partner, and that's tremendously effective. And you can do it alone. But in a perfect world, you'd have one of our specialists helping you because then you get the benefit of their accumulated knowledge, and they have direct contact to us, me and my partner John and the others in our training facility, so that they can get help if they get stuck on something. All we want for you is to get the best help possible. Okay, and so please avail yourself of that. Now, as we went to break, which seems like forever ago, I had opened up the subject of the idea of learning how to be more straightforward in our truthful communications with others. And I think in order to symbolize it. No, to be more specific, to show exactly what I'm talking about, Several years ago, my spouse, Alice, and I had a little confrontation. Probably a wrong word. An argument. A couple of old fools bickering. Probably how it looked to the outside world if they'd been there. And, you know, we both got a little stuck. We both probably got a little out of the moment. We both probably got a little angry. We both probably got a little scared. I don't know. You know, those things happen. It's like a puff of smoke, and all of a sudden you're on edge and saying things that on reflection is, oh, boy, what was I thinking? And both partners will do it, some more than others, but it's not about a blame game. It's about how do you get back to something meaningful with this person you love? It's not that I hated Alice. It's not that she hated me. We both got trapped. And I know enough to know that when you get trapped, you're usually in the past. You're not in real time with your mate. You're in some other time, mom, dad, uncle, someone who said or did something that made you feel bad when you were a kid. Yes, that's simplistic. It's also pretty true. So Alice and I are kind of into it, and it's getting to that. It gets ugly is probably too big a word. It really didn't feel good, okay? And all of a sudden, I had a moment of clarity, which I guarantee was an accident. I didn't go, okay, excuse me, it's time for a moment of clarity. Let me get my spiritual wings on here. Let me think this through, who I'm talking to, what I'm saying, and what I mean. It wasn't that. It was much more a punch in the gut, an emotional reaction to what I was feeling. And I just stopped and I said, wait a minute, honey. I just realized I'm scared to death. As we argue, I'm afraid I'm going to lose you. Now, at that point, I was probably already almost 70 years old, and we'd been together almost 25 years or more. That may sound like a weird comment at that point in time and space, and yet that's exactly what I felt like. I'm afraid I'm going to lose you, and I just want to run away. That was the end of my sentence, and I started crying. And Alice started crying, and we fell into each other's arms, hugging. And what it was the most graphic example that I know of that I can safely and openly say on this open forum here of telling the truth about myself, not about her. I'm afraid I will lose you. I feel like running away. Not, you made me feel this, you didn't do it. This is me reacting to this discussion. And it was a life-altering thing. My only regret, I do have one. I didn't learn it 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Oh, but then, you know, maybe I'd still been with my first wife or second wife or whatever, or someone in between. But it isn't the point. The point is telling the truth. Look how simple it is. I'm afraid of how I feel. I'm scared. I feel like running away. None of that indicts her. None of it says it's her fault or her cause. None of it even says it's mine. It just says how I feel. Could it relate to my father, my mother, my past, my ex-wife? Yeah, but we're not here to analyze anything. Just here to tell the truth. And the next truth is, we got a little break coming up, so don't go far away. This is Russell on HealthyLife.net, moving beyond loss.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Russell, moving beyond loss. HealthyLife.net radio. Actually, very excited. I hadn't written out any kind of script or bullet points for today. I just kind of created a title and said, I'll wing it. Well, I'm actually glad. I'm kind of glad of where it has flown and where I think I want to negotiate this final leg of our flight and landing. And I want to direct this to how easy it is to tell the truth when you take away the idea of being judged for it. So obviously within a couple, you must create enough safety with each other. And that's kind of individual and group. The two of you as a couple, each of you as an individual, have to find a way to be personally honest, not honest about the other person, which isn't possible. And I want to introduce a kind of a third rotating ball gravitating above this whole thing. It may shock and surprise you. I have, over the last 30 years, I think I've indicated, I've probably worked with close to 20,000 people within couples, you know, who have called for help within their marriages or within their divorces or their relationships afterward where their children are involved after a divorce. And one of my observations, and every once in a while I get to discuss this with a therapist or a social worker, someone who's a real professional in those fields, and I have been prone to say, if you take a microscope and put it above someone's skin and look at the microscope, someone who looks beautiful without the microscope, all of a sudden there might be little mites and motes and all kinds of things. The skin may have some decay, you know, the skin does come off at night, you know, there's all kinds of little imperfections under the perfection. And that's just the way it is. That is not a comment on anyone's skin. Even what looks perfect, you know, under a microscope won't be. It will have its flaws and so on. And the point of that little semi-lecture is to say, if you take a microscope and put it on your mate, you're going to find stuff. Just like if you put it on their skin. If you start looking at their head, their brain, the way they think, their heart, the way they feel or communicate or not, their spiritual aspect, however you define that. You start putting a microscope on something else, on someone else, you're going to find stuff, and it's going to affect you. It might offend you. You might resent it. You might like it. But if you're looking that close, that deeply, you're probably going to dig up stuff that doesn't make you happy. Now you may use it against them. In the book Moving On, we went on the phrase shopping list, you know, like you make a list to go to the grocery, bread, milk, so on. We've watched couples make lists against each other. And they call you and they'll tell you, well, he does this and that and that and that, and she does this and that and that and that. It's like, oh, so should we go to Ralph's, the grocery store, and put all that stuff back on the shelf? I mean, excuse me, how are we going to deal with that? So we have this situation where we are in 12-step language, like AA and Al-Anon, they say you're not supposed to take someone else's inventory. In other words, it's not your job to look closely at them and tell them what's wrong with them. In fact, it's quite not done. It's not correct. Yet people do it all the time. And in the therapy world, not the therapist, but the people who spend so much time, I've watched couples that just talk the relationship to death. They pick it apart. They've got a microscope. They discuss, they analyze every word, what they said, what they didn't say, who said, what meant, whatever, your father, your mother, your brother, your sister. And like, excuse me, when do you get to have a relationship? You're spending your whole life talking about the relationship, analyzing the relationship, discussing the relationship. You ain't having one. And you're making a mockery of what it might be by overanalyzing, by having a microscope. So I guess a theme for today, along with I'm fine and other lies, is put the microscope away. Put it out of sight. Put it where you will stop using it. Because what you do, rather than bringing a better view, what you do is distort your view. Let's face it. If you're in love with someone and want to be that way and stay that way, you may need to have a little bit of a blind eye. You may need to not be looking into the pores on their skin or their soul or their heart. Not because we need them to be perfect or that the fact that we're all imperfect to some degree, but that how they are isn't your business. How you are is your business. And what you need to be doing is striving to be, I know this will sound awfully kind of spiritually cliche, to strive to be the best you, not the best critic of your mate. And the criticism is a killer, because criticism is why we don't tell the truth. Why do we lie about how we feel? Because we feel criticized when someone says, oh, you shouldn't feel that way. And this goes back to the earliest false grief training we get. Your little boy or little girl come home from preschool with tears in your eyes, and mommy or daddy says, what happened? And you tell the truth. You said, the other little girls were mean to me. at which your parent says, don't feel bad, here, have a cookie, you'll feel better. And that sets the table for this whole topic today of I'm fine and other lies. We say we're fine because when we tell the truth, we're told, truth doesn't work here. Don't feel that way, which implies that feeling that way is bad rather than it is truth. So the mission is to tell the truth because it's the only connecting device we have. Even if your truth with your mate is different than their truth, even if when they tell their truth, you don't like it, but the one thing you can't ever negate is that they haven't lied. Because when they lied, you feel bad, you feel judged, you feel untrusted. So how are you going to trust your mate when they don't appear to trust you? Okay? Hopefully we've made a theme come full circle here that explains why I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I don't care what anyone thinks about you. I only care what you think about you. And that is what has to be redirected. You have to go back. Some of you may be very well helped by getting the Grief Recovery Handbook, going back to square one, getting more emotionally complete with mom, dad, and others who affected you to think that you're not enough. So much so that when you tell the truth, it isn't acceptable. We want you telling the truth about you so that your life works for you. Hopefully your mate can learn to do the same thing for himself or herself. And now as a couple, we have a truth as a connecting device rather than as a division. And I'm going to divide us for this month by thanking you. Thanks for your ears, your heart, your spirit, your soul. I love you, each and every one of you. This is Russell on Moving Beyond Loss on HealthyLife.net Radio. See you next time.